Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 27th, 2011. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Carissa Thorpe, and we have two guest hosts in the studio today. We have Tara Gardner again. Hey, Tara.
Hey.
And Tara Millen. Two Taras. Just realized that Alyssa is away today. Happy National Vegetarian Week, everyone. Did you know it's National Vegetarian Week?
No, I didn't know that.
I should really know because I work for Earth Save Canada, but I didn't know until I saw it posted online. I think I saw it on Twitter. Biff Naked said it on Twitter, and I was like,
It's in the UK, so it doesn't really apply to Canada. I was going to say that. So on today's show, that was a trick question.
Global events.
On today's show, our first segment will feature special guest and local Vancouver activist Denise Swanson, who is organizing a summer film series here in Vancouver called Focus on Food, which starts next week on June the 1st. As part of the film series, she'll be presenting many excellent animal rights films, so I asked her to come on the show to give us some of her top animal rights film recommendations, and she has chosen some really good ones. Two films that I've seen myself and one that I have on my must-see list. And what are they, you might ask? Well, stick around to find out, as this segment will be coming up in around 11 minutes. For our feature interview today, we have a guest who I had the great pleasure of speaking with on the phone earlier this week, Dr. Jody Castricano, who is a professor in the Department of Critical Studies at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan campus, and who has recently developed and taught a fourth-year university course at UBC on the subject of posthumanism and critical animal studies. One of the best things about my job here at Animal Voices is that I'm able to meet such a diverse and impressive array of different activists around the world who are doing such great things for the animals. This may come in the form of running animal welfare organizations or rescuing cats and dogs or putting on vegan bake sales, but Jody here takes on a rather unique approach in this custom-developed course that she teaches to have her students question and analyze our treatment of animals in our society, many of whom are even just broaching the subject for the very first time. And the results, as you will see, have been amazing. This is going to be a fascinating talk, I guarantee, as we delve into what can be seen as a case study of the human mind and how a sample of everyday people may react to being immersed into the world of animal issues, both via academic and practical means. On a completely different note, I had what I shall call a very fun and animal-friendly outing last night, part of which you were also in attendance for, Carissa.
I was.
Yes, Carissa and I first went to the very first shoe swap at the new Eco...
Good job!
I know, I had to concentrate. They're going to call it shoe swap in the future, they said. It's such a tongue twister. Anyway, it's the shoe swap at the new eco-friendly and vegan shoe store, and nice shoes in town. What a great idea, I thought this was, to unload your unwanted shoes and perhaps gain some new ones all for free. I left there with four pairs of awesome shoes that actually all look brand new, plus a great pair of shoes that I purchased from the store that I had been eyeing on their website now for some time. I try not to buy new shoes anymore, but I figured this was a deserved treat, especially as if you divided the cost of what I spent by what I came home with, that is four pairs of fantastic shoes, one pair of boots, and a vegan lip balm, it turns out to be a great steal. But having said that, I want to say that I find the prices at Nice Shoes to be really reasonable for the high quality of footwear that you are getting, that you know is ethically produced and in which no animals have been harmed in the making of. And they do have a great selection as well. I do recommend that you check them out at 3568 Fraser Street in Vancouver, or you can order shoes on their website as well at gotniceshoes.com. And then, because it was fairly close to the shoe store, my sister and I went to the new vegan pizza place in Vancouver, aptly named Vegan Pizza House, to check it out for the very first time. Have either of you two gone there?
Yeah,
Tara? Just the other night.
Awesome. So we've all gone there now. I must say that it seems like a lot of vegans in Vancouver and beyond have been raving about this place even before it opened last month. And why is that? Because it's pizza, right?
It's really I was thinking it must be a big draw because everybody has been there already and they haven't been open very long.
Yeah, I posted it on Facebook the first time I went. Yeah. Everybody was commenting, where is this place? Yeah. I need to go right now.
Yeah, I've already been twice in like a week or something. Yeah. And I went last Sunday for the first time and someone that I know was there and was like, is this your first time here? And I was like, it's been open for like, 6 days?
I know. They have a vegan meat lovers, which, I mean, we've been getting it. Tastes so good. It's so strange to order a meat lovers as a vegan.
I know. It's a strange title for a pizza, too. Yeah. Vegan meat lovers.
Yeah.
So with the new amazing non-dairy Daya cheese, more and more pizza places are able to offer pizzas that taste as authentically cheese-like as the rich and gooey pizzas that we all grew up with, but maybe have since forgone in favor of helping the animals because dairy is really not kind to the animals. So Vegan Pizza House, which is located at 2119 Kingsway in Vancouver, is a vegan's dream come true, but I have to say, even the most ardent meat eaters will be impressed by their tasty food. Their location is a small hole-in-the-wall type establishment that features 16 seats and counter service, really reasonable prices, and I do like that it is in their mandate to keep the prices down. I got a slice of pizza with faux ground beef, faux ham, peppers, and olives on it, a Caesar salad, and a scrumptious and generous piece of garlic bread, all for $7. Their single slices are $1.96 each, but they also have some good combo deals, and I love the pizza so much that I just had to have a second slice. So I think that what I liked about it so much was, I don't know if you found this, but the pizza had a bit of a piquant flavor in the sauce, which kind of gave it a little bite. It was just a really different tasting kind of pizza. Really good. Mm-hmm. Like, just really flavorful.
I really like that crust. The crust is really good.
Yeah, my sister said it was a thicker crust than, I think she said, than another pizza place that we've been to. I can't remember which one, but I thought it was all good. The Caesar salad was amazing. It was so garlicky, which I really like, and it was really good Caesar salad. And then, as I mentioned, the garlic toast was just awesome. It was so soft and really tasty. Mm. And, you know, it's not that often or hardly ever that you're able to sit down to a quick and casual restaurant meal, a vegan Caesar salad and pizza. But now you can do it in Vancouver thanks to Vegan Pizza House. They do deliver as well within a 10-kilometer radius, which sadly does not reach to my house. And they also sell vegan lasagna and spaghetti. Have any of you tried
that yet? No, but I think there's a delivery. I think they deliver further if you pay a little extra.
Yeah,
I think
they only deliver up to 10 kilometers.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
so okay. $4 charge, $2 per 5 kilometers. So,
oh, I see.
Yeah,
I see.
So unfortunately...
Maybe it's because it'll be cold by the time it gets to your house.
Oh, possibly.
Or maybe because it's just too darn far. Yeah, I think yours isn't working, Tara Millen, so you might have to talk on hers, but... they are open until 10 p.m. on weekdays and 11 p.m. on weekends, which is awesome, open late. The only bad thing about the place, I thought, is that they use disposable plates and cutlery to serve on, so I suggest trying to take your own plate and fork if you decide to go there, which I always do try to do if I know they're going to have disposables. All in all, I love Vegan Pizza House and will try to make my way over there in the future again at any opportune excuse that I can muster. And,
I think it's really great. I think they're really setting a trend because there's a new pizza, well, not new, but there's a pizza place in Surrey that I heard about on Facebook from my friend Kathleen.
Yeah, that's been around for a while.
Yeah, and I thought it was recently that they just started serving it with Daya cheese, like a regular pizza place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now having probably because Daya isn't actually that, it's pretty new.
Yeah, yeah, it's really, really good. I'm so excited to find out about new places, like, you know.
Yeah.
They're like, oh yeah, we can just replace it with Daya cheese. Yeah. Yeah, that's really
great. I wish more people would realize that. I've been talking to people about Foundation Lounge doesn't have Daya cheese, and it's like, why?
Yeah.
When people go there
that are vegan friendly, I found.
Which is weird. They're a vegetarian restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah. They're vegetarian. They're not vegan.
Yeah, I know, but there's no reason to hold so steady to it when people are jumping from meat eaters right now to vegan is the thing that I'm seeing a lot of.
The difference between, it's so close.
Yeah, I think like now that it's becoming more mainstream and they're seeing that they can make a profit off of it, now they're wanting to do it, but...
I mean, I don't get why Foundation isn't catching on to it. Yeah. Like, you would have vegans going there in droves.
Yeah. Well, I think
you already have them going there, but they'd go there more often. Yeah. I certainly would.
The last time I was at the NOM, they didn't have it, and this...
Were they just out?
No. The time before the last time. And then I went a few weeks ago and they had it on the menu and I was like, oh, wow, this is awesome. Because they didn't have it for a really long time. So, yeah, it's starting to catch
on. Hate to break up your fun here, but you've got some events for us, Tara. Why don't we go ahead with that?
Okay. On May 28th, that's tomorrow, we have Shoes for Sharks. That's happening at Nice Shoes at 3568 Fraser Street. They're donating 10% of their weekend proceeds to Shark Truth. So you can find out more at gotniceshoes.com. And there's also tomorrow happening World Parrot Refugee Work Party. If anybody's going to be on the island this weekend,
I think it's refuge.
Or refuge.
But the parrots could be refugees because they're in danger of being killed if they don't go there, right? So that works too.
Yes, thanks. It's happening in Coombs, BC tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at worldparrotrefuge.org. that's it for events, pretty much.
Did you want to talk about the event tomorrow? Stop BBC Animal Research.
Oh yeah, there's an event happening tomorrow with Stop BBC Animal Research. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be like public or not.
Well, considering they sent out a media press release, yeah, I'm sure it's fine.
Okay. Well, we're meeting tomorrow at the cafe.
Periglia. It's a tongue twister. It's at UBC next to the Shoppers Drug Mart.
The cafe. Yeah. We've been doing lots of preparation for it, so hopefully it will be we'll have a really good turnout. We're going to be doing a morning for the animals at UBC. And we're asking people to dress all in black, and if you have the Stop UBC t-shirt, you should bring that. If not, we will probably have some spare t-shirts for you to wear. And we're going to be filming, taking lots of pictures, and raising awareness, handing out leaflets, that kind of stuff. So be sure to come out.
So it's sort of like a funeral procession, right?
Yes, exactly.
So dress all in black.
Yeah, it's going to be a good turnout.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, thank you very much for that. If you have any events that you would like to have advertised on our show, just email them to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post them on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. So our first interview today is with local Vancouver animal activist Denise Swanson, who is the organizer of an upcoming summer film series called Focus on Food, which will be taking place from June 1st until the end of the summer at the Unitarian Church of Vancouver. Today, Denise will be presenting to us some of her top animal rights film recommendations, which she will be showing at the Focus on Food film series. Hi, Denise. Welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hi, Allison.
So, you have some film recommendations for us, and you actually have a film series coming up that you're going to be showing in town here in Vancouver, and these films will be shown at them, right?
That's right.
Okay, so what's your first film?
Well, the first film is actually on social justice. It's called Black Gold, but the following week, June 8th, we're starting three in a row about animals, and the first one is called The Emotional World of Farm Animals. Mm-hmm. It is based on the book by Jeffrey Musayef Mason, who wrote many books on animals, but this one is called The Pig Who Sang to the Moon.
And that happens to be one of my favorite all-time books.
I love it.
I would say one of my top three or four books. It's an amazing book, people. You have to read it if you haven't. But let's talk about the film that goes with it.
Yeah. So Jeffrey Mason is a former psychoanalyst who then started studying the emotions of animals. He wrote a famous book called When Elephants Weep, and another one called Dogs Never Lie About Love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a cat one too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
The cat who came back or something like that. I think I have that one at home.
Yeah. So in this film, which is based on The Pig Who Sang to the Moon, he visits many or several different farm animal or other animals as well, sanctuaries where rescued animals live out their lives. And he starts off at Animal Place in California and talks with the co-founder called Kim Sterla. Mm-hmm. And they do a segment on pigs and showing the rescued pigs and different stories about different animals, a piglet that was rescued, and a lot of these animals have really amazing stories. They jump or fall off trucks on the way to slaughter.
Which happens to be the best day of their life.
Uh-huh.
Which, well, the beginning of the rest of their life.
Well, there was a calf, actually, they talk about, who had an amazing recovery. He totally shattered one leg.
Oh.
And so that wasn't a very good day of his
no.
life. But he healed really, really well, considering how horrible the injury was. And, yeah, he's living there and running around now on the leg, and it's quite amazing.
Yeah, I have seen this film, and it is a really great film to show people. I always sort of compare this movie to The Peaceful Kingdom. Similar, showing the stories of the animals, but
yeah.
It's one that I think that often gets overlooked because it's not as well known and definitely should be checked out, The Emotional World of Farm Animals. It's one of your top choices, right? I'm glad you're showing this one.
Yes, and they also go to... they go to Farm Sanctuary, and they talk with the former manager, Diane Miller, as well as the co-founder, Lori Boston. And they show how tom turkeys show their emotions in their changing the colors of their snoods, the thing hanging down
mm-hmm.
on the front of their face.
That icky thing, I always call it.
Well,
the thing that freaks me out. Icky and beautiful at the same time.
But, yeah, turkeys are so sweet.
They are. Oh, definitely.
One of my favorite animals.
So.
The story of Queenie the cow who escaped. Queenie, I guess, named after running around in Queens, New York, before she was mm-hmm. caught by the police there. And
if our listeners haven't heard of that story, just check it out on YouTube. It's one of the most amazing rescue stories you'll ever see. And you may stop eating cows after you see this one.
And after you see the warm welcome from the other cows at the sanctuary when Queenie arrives, that's really...
I know, it's beautiful. Touching. So what do you have for our second film?
Okay, the next one we're going to show, which is June 15th, is A Cow at My Table, which is an older film, 1998, but mm-hmm. still very much relevant, and it's an absolutely amazing film. It's produced, directed, photographed, and edited by Jennifer Abbott, who also is the co-director and editor of another very well-known film called The Corporation, another documentary.
That's right, and Jennifer Abbott lives here in B.C., I think,
I
on one of
on
the...
Galliano, I
yeah,
think,
one of the
there?
One of the islands there, definitely. Yeah, so she is comes from B.C., great to watch a local film. Was this
Canadian
movie...
Content.
Yeah, is it all Canadian content?
Pretty much.
It was all filmed
mostly.
In Canada? Okay.
Mostly. There are, you know, luminaries from all over the place. There, you know, the States, and there's Vandana Shiva, Jim Mason, Jean Boston, ethologists such as Ian Duncan. I think Ian Duncan, oh yeah, he's based in Guelph.
Yes.
Livestock spokespeople. So it's a very well-rounded film because it's got people from so many different angles. Jeanette Armstrong, the activist writer and artist. Carol Adams, Tom Reagan.
So really well-known philosophers in the field of animal issues and animal rights. What is the film about? I haven't seen this one yet. I think I have it at home, but I have not watched it yet.
Well, it basically documents the history of factory farming, basically farming in the second century of the last, or sorry, the last half of the last century,
mm-hmm.
and how it began. And it just talks about so many things in under an hour and a half. It talks about protein and how the whole mythology of protein being sort of the king of all nutrients, the one thing that we, the more the better, and how it helped the British to overcome the militarily the armies of other countries because they were beef eaters and all these amazing little tidbits of information and stories of from Farm Sanctuary's Jean Bauer, how a sole chicken escaped on a chicken farm, and the farmer identified with this individual animal, and that animal became a pet. So how you can treat groups of animals very differently from individual animals, and the story of Queenie, the escaped cow.
Queenie's in this one, too.
Pardon me?
Queenie's in this film as well.
No, I don't think she is. She's in the
okay.
other film. But it's the same idea of how when you have an individual, you can identify with it.
Yeah.
But you can mistreat groups of basically the same type of being.
Yeah, you know,
without even thinking about
it. I find it interesting when, you know, a cow escapes the slaughterhouse, or there was the case of those two pigs in the UK that escaped, right, for months and months. And whereas on one hand people are killing and consuming these animals every day, when one animal like that is individualized, everyone is totally for rescuing them and not wanting them dead and wanting them saved and sent to a sanctuary where they can live out the rest of their lives in peace and happiness.
Yeah.
It's interesting how the psychology of humanity works in that way, for sure.
Exactly. And Jennifer Abbott shows how difficult it is to get footage, to get into these farms.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I recall her saying that she had to basically crawl under fences to get the footage for some of this film. Is that right?
The film actually shows a confrontation.
Okay.
It's not really a confrontation, but she's asked to leave. She's outside the farm photographing, but she's asked to leave anyway.
Very interesting. And what is the third film you'd like to talk about?
Mad Cowboy, which is the story of Howard Lyman, who is a fourth-generation Montana farmer, rancher, and feedlot operator, or formerly, I should say. He's not doing that now. And he talks about the decline of family farms and the use of chemicals and what these chemicals have done to the land. And
he has an amazing life story. And not only that, he's an amazing speaker.
Yeah,
I've seen him speak several times. We actually had him here in Vancouver in 2003, I believe it was.
That was for the Animal Voice Film Festival, right? Where his film was shown, was it?
I think it was for an Earth Save event.
Another time.
Yeah, you're right. I think he did come here again for an Animal Voices Film Festival. You're right about that.
Film Festival was inspired by Animal Voices radio show on Co-op Radio and previous co-host Carl Loskin,
who's hopefully listening.
Very generously donated towards the cost of putting on this series. So,
wow, that's great, Carl.
That was a very inspiring festival.
Mad Cowboy. What year was this film made? It's been around for a while.
I believe it was 2005.
Oh, okay. Not that long then.
Not that long ago, yeah. And
so what is this film about?
What happened to Howard was his brother died at the tender age of 32, and Howard attributes that probably to the chemicals on the farm. And Howard himself developed a spinal tumor that he could have been paralyzed for the rest of his life.
He had, I think, he said something like a one in a million or
one in a million chance
to walk out of that hospital.
And he did.
And what I love about his story, he says, that told me, you know, he may not have said it in these exact words, but paraphrasing, you know, that told me that my purpose in life was to educate others about what's happening.
Yeah, and he vowed.
And that's what he's done.
Even before the operation, he vowed that he was going to turn his, you know, family farm back into what it was before the advent of of all these chemicals and things, to an organic farm, basically, regardless of whether he had to do it from a wheelchair, which luckily he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, he's one really, it's a miraculous story, and I think the reason why Howard Lyman, the way he speaks and this film is such a success is because he's so relatable to people. He just seems like a normal kind of guy. And he's funny, too, you know.
Yeah,
he is funny.
He's
just one of those speakers that just sort of enchant you. Very charming, in a way. He's a really, really nice guy, too.
And there's a lot about, there are stories of parents of kids who died of variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is the one that's caused by mad cow disease.
Yeah.
So that's one of the main points of the film. And he has many segments with Tom Reagan, the professor of philosophy and founder of Culture and Animals Foundation. A wonderful segment by him about, you know, the inner life of animals. And
so again, a little bit akin to the Emotional World of Farm Animals movie.
I think that these three, I put them together because they all really, really related.
They all seem to complement each other really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a film series that is going to be really powerful, and I think draw a lot of emotion from people.
Yeah,
which I'm
calling,
hope.
Yeah, calling it Focus on Food film screenings, and because animals are such a huge part of our food system, there will be a fair bit on, not all of the films will be on animals, but mm-hmm. a good proportion of them will be.
Yeah, well, thank you for doing that, Denise, because this film series is open to everyone. Can you talk about it and perhaps the there's a farmer's market going along with it as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, brand new farmer's market in an area of Vancouver that really needed one, 49th and Oak. It's going to be starting on Wednesday, June 1st. The farmer's market is from 3 until 7 every Wednesday. And it's at 49th and Oak at the Unitarian Church of Vancouver, which is 949 West 49th Avenue. The films will be held at 7:30 in the evening after the farmer's market in the building called Hewitt Hall at the church, in the room called the Fireside Room. And it's admission by donation to the nonprofit of the week. There'll be several different ones, including free vegan snacks. And, yeah.
It sounds fun. And then the farmer's market, before that, people can check out the farmer's market. I presume there's going to be a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables
Absolutely.
There. There's a website for the farmer's market. Do you remember what that is?
I don't, but you could easily
Google OakStreetFarmersMarket.com, I think. I think it's OakStreetFarmersMarket.com. So if you go on there, you can actually check out about the farmer's market, and it lists all the vendors that are going to be there.
Yes, and if you want to find out what the film lineup is in July and August, because it will be continuing then, you can go to the Unitarian Church website. It's vancouver.unitarian.ca.
That sounds really great. Now, this film series, it's entry by donation, is that correct?
Yeah.
And I think you were saying before that the money raised is going to be donated to different charities, is that right?
Yeah, the church has charities for the Environmental Fund, which is called the Green Fund, and I believe there's another one for social justice initiatives, and then there will be Earth Save Canada, Vancouver Humane Society, probably Liberation BC, perhaps something like Sea Shepherd, because we will be showing the end of the line about declining fish mm-hmm. stocks.
And, you know, you were telling me before about some of the other films that are coming up,
yeah.
and I hope to have you again on the show perhaps in a month or so to speak about the next run, perhaps the July and August films that you'll be showing. So thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, we're going to have at least one evening devoted to chickens. We're going to show Mercy for Animals film Foul Play, and maybe some others as well. And we're going to be showing films like Food Inc., Meet the Truth, which is on the environmental
Excellent
impact.
Film.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Denise, for coming on and speaking to us about these films. And I do hope to have you on later on in the summer. And I know I will definitely be attending some of these films as well, and the farmer's market happening before that. So thanks so much, Denise.
Thank you, Allison.
Take care. So that was Denise Swanson, and I just wanted to reiterate the website address of the Unitarian Church of Vancouver's, their website. It's vancouver.unitarians.ca, and so Denise's schedule there of her film series will be on there soon.
Join us at the Rhizome Cafe on Saturday, May 28th for Shaboom Live, a fundraiser for Co-op Radio. Featuring some of the best local acts in town, this eclectic evening of music includes performances by Megan Regeer, Daisy Blue Groff, Kathleen Forrester, Noreen Braun, and the dance band Busy Bee and the Honeycomb Kids. Hosted by sociocomic Mary Lee Stevenson, you are sure to have a lot of laughs and a great time. Tickets are only between $10 and $20 at the door, and with door prizes and a 50-50 draw as well, all proceeds go to support Co-op Radio. Shaboom Live starts at 7 p.m. Come early for dinner. Rhizome Cafe is located at 317 East Broadway, has a delicious menu available throughout the evening, and is fully licensed. For more info on Shaboom Live, go to shaboomcfro.wordpress.com. And don't forget to tune in to Shaboom every Monday from 2:30 to 4 p.m. to hear the latest and greatest women in music. Shaboom Live, May 28th. See you there.
We're gonna move on, we're gonna blow this.
In this week's news, I just have one story and then maybe a couple quick events that I just remembered that I'll let you know about as well. So vegan prisoners in the UK have asked for better food. They were complaining that their sandwiches were too soggy. So it looks like their sandwiches consisted of, I guess, just bread and then lettuce, tomato, and cucumber, which, like, could you imagine eating that every single day and that's all you're supposed to live off of as a vegan?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's like one of my favorite sandwiches, actually.
You're like, I think I can handle prison. It's not that hard.
That actually sounds really delicious.
So apparently about 1% of prisoners in the UK are vegan, and they've said that their sandwiches have been soggy every day and they're just asking for equal opportunities that other inmates in the prison have. And so there's a vegan prisoner support group, and they sent out a 12-page recipe booklet to the catering staff at every prison in England, Wales, and Scotland to promote more inventive vegan meals. The little booklet is called The Vegan Sandwich Baguette and Wrap Fillings Cookbook and suggests fillings such as butter bean and fresh herb spread and peanut butter and hummus to replace the lettuce, tomato, and cucumber. So I guess some more protein in there.
That sounds too fancy for a prison to me. I mean, as I was saying before, the regular meals that I know for meat eaters are like a bologna and processed cheese sandwich on white Wonder Bread, right?
The article goes on to say that the average cost of prison food is $2 and, or two, I don't know how to say it, like 2.10 pounds. I don't know how to say, is that how you say it?
Pound? What do you mean?
Yeah, because it's pounds, right? So it says 2.10.
Oh, in the UK?
I don't know. Do you say dollars? Do you say pounds?
It's about $4 Canadian.
I'm pretty confident it's pounds.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to say the point part, like the point 10. So,
yeah,
like 2 pounds a day.
Yeah.
To spend on food, and it's basically like the prison sort of said, as long as it doesn't go over their budget, they're willing to look at it. So, you know, but I don't know. The online article that I found, they talked to someone in the prison and they said it's a sad day when we are basically told that we have to tell our catering staff to start cooking a whole bunch of new recipes because some vegan prisoners are complaining about soggy salad sandwiches, and goes on to like talk about how they really pander to criminals and says, you know, they're catering to the whim of every 80,000 odd thieves, rapists, murderers, and child abusers. But I was thinking about it, like, I don't see people being vegan who are like rapists and murderers. I think they're probably animal activists,
but I don't think that's relevant. Why are you going to be prejudiced for the animal activists? They're all prisoners and they're all humans. They all have basic rights to have basic nutrition. So even if they are a murderer and a vegan, I think they deserve the food that is in alignment with their beliefs. Yes, they may believe in killing people, but they don't believe in killing animals. So they should be.
Like, that's what I mean.
But
it's like, highly doubt they actually even are murderers, right?
Well, I'm just saying they could be. You can't assume that they're not.
And then just so a couple events. Sort of. We'll just sort of let you know that Forks Over Knives was, I guess, only supposed to be playing last week at Tinseltown, but it's been extended because so many people went to see it. So it's
amazing.
Extended for one more week. So if you haven't seen it,
see it now.
Really good.
Mm-hmm. And it opens in Montreal today as well. So it's expanding, and they're. I guess they've said that it's going to hopefully open across Canada, I guess, depending on how many of us go out to see it here in Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Go and
then
and see it.
Just really quickly, we have about 30 seconds left here. I am going to be hosting an Earth Save potluck at my house in Squamish for anyone from Whistler to Vancouver. And that will be on June 21st at 7 o'clock. So you can find out more about that at meetup.com/Vancouver-meatless-meetup. And we'll put that on our Facebook page as well. And you're invited to my house, I guess.
Yay! I'd love to come.
All right. So if you have an animal-related news story that you'd like us to talk about here on the show, you can email us at radio@animalvoices@gmail.com, or you can go online to our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices YVR. And just a reminder to our listeners that this is 102.7 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Thank you for that, Carissa. Today's feature interview is with Dr. Jody Castricano, who is a professor in the Department of Critical Studies at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan in Kelowna, BC. Jody has recently developed a new course that she teaches at UBCO called Posthumanism and Critical Animal Studies, which explores the question of the animal and the ethical turn towards this question by providing an introduction to historical and contemporary concerns regarding the treatment of non-human animals and exploring our ethical responsibilities towards them. She is also the editor of a published anthology called Animal Subjects, an Ethical Reader in a Post-Human World. We have Jody on the show today to tell us about this unique new course. Hello, Jody, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi, Allison. It's nice to be here, and thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. I am so happy to have you on the show today. I must say that from what I already know about the course, it does sound like an amazing curriculum of readings and activities that you have put together for your students. And I only wish that this course had been offered at UBC when I went there. It is a locally developed fourth year English class that you put together yourself. Can you start by telling us more about what it is about and how you came to decide to develop this course to teach?
Well, to begin with, it's both an English and a cultural studies course because there are people in the English program, students in the English program, as well as students in the cultural studies stream. And they're slightly different programs, of course, because one focuses on literature and the other one focuses more on cultural critiques of racism and sexism, ageism, and you know, generally speaking, those isms that we are most familiar with calling into question. The course itself, I decided to put together over the past few years when, after I had published that anthology, the collection of essays with regards to animal subjects. And I did so because primarily what I discovered when I was putting together that as a project, that in fact it was a kind of provocation in that cultural studies has historically or traditionally been somewhat impervious to the question of the non-human animal, owing to this kind of internalized paradox that maintain the status of the human that cultural studies seems to sustain. So it was for this reason that I published the collection and then went on further. I mean, because I myself am also a vegan and, you know, I've probably been concerned with animals ever since I knew that they were beside me in the room. But anyway, the course itself is aimed at exploring, as you say, the animal question. And the intent is not just that we're going to be talking about animals, not just about them in books or about them in movies, because these are all, of course, representations of animals. But it was aimed at considering the fact that animals pose a philosophical and ethical question that go really to the root not just of what we can think, but also of who we think we are as humans. And the aim of the course then was to historicize, firstly, the notion of the human and to interrogate that the idea of human exceptionalism, especially with regards to speciesism. And as you and your listeners probably know, that's a term coined by Richard Rider in the 70s and refers to that widely held belief that the human species is inherently superior to other species and so has rights or privileges that are denied to other sentient animals. And of course, it can also, speciesism can also be understood to describe that kind of oppressive behavior, cruelty, prejudice, and discrimination that are associated with such beliefs. So that in itself was meant as to bring forward Ryder's idea that it's a kind of deliberate wake-up call to challenge the morality of current practices where non-human animals are being exploited in research, in farming, domestically, and even in the wild, in quotation marks, and to also to draw the parallel between oppressions with notions of racism and sexism. So the course looked at this kind of history of speciesism, going from Aristotle through all the way up through Descartes and, you know, through philosophy and into the 19th century. So it was really, first of all, historically based. And then included and parallel to that, it situated the history of speciesism in relationship to the debates animal rights discourse, or the debate between, say, Peter Singer and Tom Reagan, which is kind of classic approach. But it also moved into works by various thinkers then regarding human-animal relationships and cognition and moral status. And then we switched into cognitive ethology, that is to say, happiness, love, family, inner lives of animals. And it ultimately then poised the course at a moment, a kind of a fulcrum point, which is to ask if, for example, this is actually true, that animals have this sentience, that they have these inner lives, then what about the way that they're being treated? What about the way that we treat them? So that really got us into the beginning of the course.
That's an amazing description that you just gave. I mean, there's definitely a lot going on in this class. Now, you've taught it once this last semester, yeah. Is that right? And yeah. Was it 27 students who took the course?
Yeah. We had started out with something like, I think there was 38 registered, and the difference dropped off. I did get an email once from one student who decided to drop the course because, as he put it, he didn't want to be preached at by a lot of righteous vegans. It's so interesting because you never know, first of all, who's going to show up in the classroom, mm-hmm. and secondly, you don't know the history of the students and what they're bringing in with them. So, you know, he said basically that he generally likes to play devil's advocate, and I said, well, you know, you could have used that as mm-hmm. a kind of pedagogical strategy.
That would make the course more interesting.
Well, in a way, yeah. Because what you do is you try to show the opposite side of things, and that is also a way for people to learn, you know, mm-hmm. what they want to say about a topic or
and
an issue.
That's what university is about. It's not just to be preached at per se, but it's to have discussions and to participate. And from reading the course syllabus, I noticed that you allocate a rather unusually large percentage of the final grade to participation, 15%. Mm-hmm. And why did you decide to make class participation such a significant part of this course?
Well, you know, let's see. I mean, that is, again, a good question. And I always, when, you know, we were thinking about having this discussion, and I mentioned to you that, at least briefly, but even in more detail, that a course like this that has the potential to actually change one's perspective on life, their own and their behaviors, and, you know, mm-hmm. really to change you fundamentally, because what you have to be able to do is to have the courage to question your own perceptions, your own assumptions, the kinds of comfortable things that you carry along. And so I thought it doesn't make sense to enable people to just coast. So the idea is to get people involved with the kinds of intense and very visceral materials that we were dealing with, and then have them participate to the extent that they're also teaching each other. The thing about this course is that it unfolded organically to the extent that sometimes I might have prepared a lecture, for example, but the students had an issue that they really wanted to discuss, and I had to be prepared to jettison the lecture and to engage at that kind of general conversational level, and it really worked that way.
That brings me to my next question. Is I'm curious as to how emphatically the students engaged in the participation. As you said, sometimes they wanted definitely to speak on a certain subject. Were a lot of them vocal and impassioned about the course topics, or did some just not speak up that much in class? What was, or was there a range?
I actually found, for the most part, out of the 27 students, I would say that 24 students were deeply engaged and really quite passionate. And actually, it's always a kind of success in a way when you you're in a classroom and you see students turn and talk to each other instead of focus on the instructor, because that means actually that there's things that are alive in the room and they're dealing with them as we go along. And I can, at that point, I can also act as a kind of just a kind of moderator. And so what we also did is have a chat, like a sort of a online discussion forum, and students were writing mini essays on there. Like,
that's amazing. That's awesome.
Just really wonderful. Really wonderful.
Now, I love that for the midterm, you had each of your students watch the film Earthlings and write a paper about it and also do a class presentation about how the film affected them personally. First of all, I commend you for making your students watch this film. That's amazing. And secondly, I'm very curious to how this went. How were they affected by the film and what were their reactions like?
Originally, when I was putting the course together, I had Earthlings on the syllabus and had intended on showing it in class. Obviously, I would have to do it over a couple of classes. But I decided that that's not the way to go, that in fact what I ought to be doing is putting it back in their hands. So we have a midterm break of a week. And I made it a requirement that people write a short essay on the film and then come prepared to do a short presentation on what it is that they had, what most affected them on the film. And I have a colleague at Brock University, and I was kind of concerned about showing the film because, in fact, I mean, it's very hard to see this film. And as you probably know, and he said, well, you know what? The animals go through hell, so people can actually...
It's the least that people can do is watch it.
It's the least that people can do, and actually that so solidified it for me. So anyway, off they went for the week, and as I said, I had prefaced their viewing of this, their screening of this film. We had already talked about stuff in experiments being done at Penn State, that, you know, that the head injuries, this, the kind of things that were happening in the 80s, and PETA had gone in and done received a lot of footage from undercover stuff. But I sent them home with the idea that, well, what we have to do now is to be able to honor what those animals are going through, because we've already come to the conclusion that, in fact, animals are conscious, they have inner lives, they have family relationships, they can experience happiness, of course, as Bentham says, they can suffer. So off they went with all of this. And this was going to, excuse me, be the first time really that they saw a sort of intense and extended coverage of all of the issues that we had been talking about. What happened? Well, it was phenomenal, because probably to within a student, even those who didn't really speak up, the three that didn't speak up so much in the class, all of them were somehow, in one way or another, deeply affected by one or more of the topics of the images. And that is what they built their papers on, this kind of response. Because, of course, we all know that Earthlings asks us to come to terms with the realities of factory farming and vivisection and fur farms and leather and the use of animals in entertainment. And so when you're doing theory, sometimes you can veer into abstractions, but this was the opportunity that I suggested to them to further those reflections by, excuse me, bearing witness to Earthlings. So the whole thing was based on the notion, first of all, of bearing witness. And I could say that, if you don't mind, I'll just speak to the next film we watched, which was The Witness by Tribe of
Heart.
Right, And that one really does speak eloquently to compassionate action, and it addresses what to do about being overwhelmed, because when you ask what was their response, many of the students said, first of all, it took them the whole week to watch the film because they could only watch it in sections, and I was pretty
well. It's a good thing they had a whole week.
Yeah, that's true. And so The Witness, you know, you have Eddie Lama, he's this individual who, like ourselves, has made this connection. So the issue of bearing witness and connection went together. And they were able then to see that, in fact, you know, this is one person's response, and that one needn't get, like many of them spoke of feeling guilt and shame. And then many of them decided, right, pretty well, like six of them decided between vegetarianism and veganism after coming back from that week.
And that alone is amazing.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I just wanted to move on here because we are almost out of time, but there is an animal research facility opening up on your campus, which is a current and real-life issue and perhaps controversial issue that you tied into the discussions in the course. Can you tell us about this and how that went?
Right. Well, this facility, as you know, the opening of this facility was coincidental, or at least the plans to open the facility. It will be opening in September. But the building of it was, coincidental with the Stop UBC research protests that were going on in Vancouver with regards to the testing and long-term experiments done on the turtles and on the monkeys for Parkinson's. I won't even get into that because I realize that we're short of time. But again, the classroom became this this sort of space of understanding in real time terms some of the issues that we were dealing with, not only theoretically but through screening films. And so the students, of course, realized that there was escalating media attention on the situation at UBC Vancouver. And it was also coincidental with the shooting of all of the sled dogs in Whistler. Mm-hmm. And so the students were getting really quite involved with issues of social justice, and also with regards to the transparency at the university, because as faculty, we're all responsible for making our research relevant to the public. They call it deliverables, and yet at the same time, UBC Vancouver and UBC Okanagan were also saying, well, you know, we can't tell you what it is we're doing because it's too dangerous, and there's sort of patents on, you know, medicines, and who would invest in all of this. So anyway, I went to the head of biology because I knew that, in fact, I was going to be turned down if I asked to gain access to the facility. And then I asked one of the acting director, he was a fellow in the position of being the director, if he would come to speak to my class, because I was also going to invite Brian Vincent from UBC Stop Animal Research, so that the students could hear from both sides of the, there's probably more than two, but anyway, setting it up that way. And both agreed to come to the class, that is, until we were both interviewed by a local newspaper. And really what ensued was that I got an email from the person saying he would not be available, that he didn't believe that these issues were debatable, and the fact that I was even talking about it mirrors very closely creationism and ideas about religion, and that what I was doing was actually running a church, and that I was mounting a direct attack on science. And this decision not to come into what he called my poisoned environment in the classroom was based on, he referred to my behavior and comments, and he said that I was hiding behind my sort of PETA self was hiding behind my professional credentials.
Wow.
And that,
That's a lot of assumptions from one person.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I was actually really happy that he wrote all that because, in fact...
Oh, you could use that in your lecture and put it on the overhead.
Well, I posted that on the discussion forum, and then, I then wrote him a lengthy email in response and also posted that for the students to see. Just to say that, you know, science isn't homogenous, and, you know, what we've got to be looking at... is at least or submitting that science is a social phenomena and a human practice and thus can't be isolated from social morality.
I would just say, because we have to sum up here, in summary, I would say, you know, it was great that you wanted both sides of the story to be presented by the appropriate people. Unfortunate that UBC once again displayed that they're not willing to do that, especially in a UBC teaching environment. And then I guess, interesting and relevant and good that Brian Vinson at least came and told his side.
Yes.
And I'm sure the students were really able to see how the political atmosphere at UBC works, perhaps something that they weren't expecting from their university, and to really...
Yeah, I think that actually, you know, UBC is not unique in this. And I mean, obviously I'm speaking as a faculty person within an institution, and I think that this is, you would find this in, everything came together nicely for purposes of the course, but I think that every single university would actually take up the same position. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Jody. The time went by way too fast.
Welcome.
It's been really fascinating. Been a real pleasure to speak with you today, and definitely wish you luck in teaching this course in the future and more success. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Allison.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
But last weekend, sorry, it might not look like it today here in Vancouver, but last weekend marked the unofficial start of summer, and for many of us, that means camping season. So on next week's show, we will be talking to Tom Sayre of the Rivers Institute at BCIT about how to keep bear safe while camping. And Bill Clinton said no to my interview, so I'm going to have to find someone else. You might think I'm kidding, but I'm serious.
Isn't he vegan?
Yeah, that's why I want to interview him. So I'll keep working on that, and I'll find someone else for next week and let you know. And in honor of Howard Lyman's inspirational Mad Cowboy documentary at the upcoming Focus on Food Film Festival this summer, here is Mad Cow Farm by the Green Beings. Be kind to the...
Mistaken, but try on.
this pry on. It's exquisitely moose shaped.
They cornered McDonald by the tractor, but one cow bumped the big machine behind her. It came to life and it attacked her, a brand new killer robot meat grinder.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Welcome to Radio EcoShock, and a special welcome to Earthbeat listeners. This is Alex Smith. We've been broadcasting Radio EcoShock to college and community radio stations for over 5 years. Now I'm filling in for Earthbeat host Daphne Wisham, while that great American green radio Earthbeat reorganizes and seeks new funding. Find out how you can help bring Daphne back by going to